Welcome to the Hawley Baptist Church podcast, bringing you into a community in which everyone is welcome, lives are changing, and Jesus is King. Thanks for listening with us today. We would invite you to subscribe so you can keep up to date with us. But for now, we pray you enjoy listening to what God has in store for you in this episode, and that it helps change your life for the better. In Jesus' name, enjoy.
Good morning, and welcome to Hawley Baptist Church, and welcome to this brand new year. Happy New Year to everyone. Mm-hmm. I'm Sue, and this is...
Hi there, I'm Phil. I think I am. It's January, isn't it? I'm not sure who I am. Yeah.
So welcome to everyone, whether you're watching live, whether you're watching on demand or on the podcast, you're all very welcome to join us as we go ahead. So we're sort of planning what we're going to do over the next hour or so, 40 minutes or so. And actually, beginning of January, it's a bit grim.
Yeah.
All the Christmas lights have gone down, and actually there's no indication at all that we've just had Christmas. So actually, it's quite bleak, I think, Christmas, January, really, isn't it?
Yeah, look out that window.
Particularly in the weather at the moment, it's pouring down outside. So sometimes it's just nice to want to go back to that, but actually sometimes, well, obviously we can't go back to it. So if you're feeling that you want to go back and just don't want to face what's going on, what happens next, stay tuned. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. So if you've got the January blues, hang in there, and maybe this morning it could be helpful for you. Martin's starting a new series, and the series is called, which is how you might be feeling, actually, Was That It? Was That It? And we're talking about disappointment and how things didn't turn out quite how we expected. Today we're going to look at Joseph, who had that experience in life, and he felt like his life had got stuck. He felt like he'd been just ignored and forgotten and was stuck in a place he didn't want to be. So January can sometimes feel a bit like
that. It goes on forever.
It's a long month. So, you know, if you've got some of those January blues, maybe this morning is a good morning for you. Here's why you need to listen, because it is important, isn't it, not to get stuck in the past. I think we can really easily get stuck in the past. And things that did or didn't happen, or things that we missed, that have gone, that we've lost, it's really easy to get stuck in that. And it's important to keep growing. I think ordinary human being, healthy things grow, don't they?
They do.
Something's healthy, it grows. And we need to look forward and grow and anticipate that. And getting stuck in the past often leads to not growing and just sort of stagnating, doesn't it? So we're going to, if we concentrate on old relationships, what we do is we don't invest in new ones and develop new and exciting ones. And if we focus on how things were so good in the past, we miss out on what God can do and wants to do in the future. It's not either or, is it? The past is important and the future is important. But the past is important to help us move into the future, to help us to learn and to grow. So we're going to be thinking a little bit about that this morning. Here's a little intro to the series that we're just starting. Have a look at this.
Disappointment. We all face it, but how do we move forward when life doesn't meet our expectations? In Was That It? We'll look at real stories of people in the Bible who found hope and purpose beyond the letdowns. Discover how God meets us in our disappointments and invites us into something bigger.
Well, good morning and Happy New Year. Thank you very much. Just to say, we're going to be looking at our Bibles this morning. If you haven't got one, there are some over in the corner. But if not, a mobile phone will do quite nicely. And Steve, I never told you that we're doing Genesis chapter 40, and verses 1 to 23. So if you could get Genesis 40 up. Not yet, you've got some time, but that would be lovely. Sorry about that, I forgot. And also, I need a clicker thing as well. You're getting your coffee. Yeah, good. Yeah, good call. Yes. Sorry. It's the new year when disorganized. Well, I am anyway. Thank you very much. So, new sermon series. Was That It? I don't know whether you are the sort of person that has high expectations or low expectations about things that happen in life? Do I know in my head that I should have low expectations, so I am pleasantly surprised by whatever life throws at me, but I can't help it. I seem to have high expectations about all sorts of things. Probably the worst thing I am at is, and my wife will confirm this, is that when we're going on holiday somewhere, I have in mind what I want. And if it doesn't fulfill that expectation, then I'm a little bit upset. So, for example, when we were going to France once, a few years ago, when Ellie was just, my eldest was just a baby, I had in my head, I said, I don't mind what the holiday is going to be as long as I can sit out in the sun and have a nice glass of red wine. It was so cold, I didn't want to sit out. In fact, the red wine was refrigerated. It was not a good May in France at that time. Another time, it's just little things. Like we went to Turkey, all-inclusive holiday. I said, I don't mind what it is as long as I get a nice cup of coffee. And all they had was instant. It ruined my entire holiday. I just have these high expectations. I have this idea in my head of what something should be, and I get disappointed when the reality doesn't match that expectation. And the same, I have to admit, is a little bit with Christmas. I love the build-up to Christmas. I love all the preparation, the buying of presents, even the wrapping of presents. I love the lights and everything. But I always find that Christmas doesn't quite match what maybe I feel it should do, what I'm told Christmas should be like. There's a bit of a narrative, isn't there? This is what Christmas should look like. They say it in the films and the movies all the time. This is what your Christmas should look like. And most of the time, it may be different for you, but most of the time, our reality doesn't match our expectations. The TV's disappointing. I can't eat as much food as I would like. And the pile of presents just gets smaller and smaller. And that's why we're looking at this series in January. Was that it? Because sometimes we ask that question after we've had something, Christmas or a holiday, and go, was that it? I was so looking forward to it. My expectations were so high. But was that all there was? The disappointment, it can hit us at any time in life or year. It's part of living life. It's those times when what you hope for or expect doesn't come to pass. Or maybe you get it, but it doesn't meet your expectations. Reality doesn't meet expectations. So we're going to be looking over the course of January at four stories from the Bible, two from the Old Testament, two from the New Testament, of where expectations, reality didn't match, when there was disappointment about all sorts of things. We're going to be looking this morning at the story of Joseph. It's in Genesis chapter 40, and we're going to be reading from verses 1 to 23 in a bit. But we are going to look at this morning what happens when you are forgotten or overlooked in life. There we are, forgotten and overlooked. So put your hands up if you were good at sports. If you are good or were good at sports at school. Oh, Sam, straight arm straight up. Yeah, Steve, yeah. There's a few of you good at sport. I was not good at sports at all at school. I was the sort of person that always got left till last when they're picking the football teams. And they're going, oh, I have that one, and I have that. And I always got left till the end because I wasn't any good at football. I always felt I was overlooked and forgotten. And I don't know if it's the same now, but growing up in the 80s and 90s, football was a huge thing. And your social standing and status as a boy was dependent on how good you were at football. So my status was all the way down here because I like to read books. And I like history and I was good at school. So I was right down the bottom and I was rubbish at football. And unfortunately, that kind of feeling of being overlooked, of being picked last, doesn't disappear when you get older. At least it's not for me. Now, I'm hoping this sermon may be for you. I don't know. Not every sermon is for you. But I feel particularly this sermon is for me. Because I feel in life that sometimes I felt, whether it's a reality or not, I felt overlooked and forgotten. Because what that I experienced at high school and primary school have always been picked last. Kind of sticks with you. And it's very hard to get rid of that feeling. And even when I went to Bible college, so I was 30 when I went to Bible college. And at that time, they had a big thing about millennials. Put your hand up if you are a millennial. Got a few of you. I am not a millennial. I am too old to be a millennial. And that's maybe feel forgotten and overlooked because they had this whole thing about we've got to raise up millennials and young leaders. I'm like, I'm not a millennial, I'm too old. And I felt forgotten and overlooked. And even when I meet with other ministers, so we belong to something called the Fervor Fast Network, which is a network of about 40 churches in the UK. And we get together and there's all these enthusiastic, experienced, successful church ministers. And I just feel a bit kind of, oh, everyone's so much better than me. And there's that guy over there who always seems to have an opinion, always seems to know the answers, and he gets all the attention. I'm left kind of sit quietly in the corner, overlooked and forgotten. Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for that. Oh. See, it's not necessarily true, but it's a feeling that I have inside me. And the problem with those feelings of being overlooked and forgotten, those feelings of rejection, they can lead to feelings of resentment. They can lead to feelings of low self-esteem, discontentment with life and what it's thrown at us, and even jealousy of other people, where we feel unable to celebrate other people's wins. I don't know, do you ever feel like that? You don't need to put your hand up when you kind of feel a bit jealous when someone succeeds in life, because why are they succeeding and why aren't I? Because sometimes that's just life. Sometimes we look at other people's lives, whether it's through social media or stuff that happened, and say, why is that happening to them and not to me? There's just this general unfairness and injustice about life. Why not me? Why can't I have that? What have I done to deserve this life? So we're going to look at a young guy called Joseph. And he should have had it all. He was young. He was intelligent. He should have been successful. And yet time and time again, he finds himself in dire straits because of the actions of others. And we're going to look at a time when he is and was forgotten and overlooked. And we're going to look at Genesis chapter 40. But before we do that, just a quick recap of the story of Joseph. You can go and watch Andrew Lloyd Webber, Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. I'm not sure how biblically correct that is. I haven't watched it. But we're just going to quickly go through the story. So let's tell about Joseph, the youngest of a big old family that's probably bigger than your group chats. He's the favorite child, which, by the way, doesn't do much for his sibling relations. Dad hands him this top-notch coat. It's like giving your youngest a sports car when everyone else gets a bus pass. And you can guess that his brothers weren't particularly cheering him on for that. Next. Joseph starts prattling on about these grand dreams where everyone else is bowing down to him, always a hit with older siblings. And soon enough, the brothers think, we've got to do something about this dream boy. So enter Pitt, stage left. Joseph gets tossed in like the day's rubbish. Then for good measure, they sell him, because that's what you do with annoying siblings, obviously. Oh, there you go. Joseph, shipped off to Egypt, goes from Pitt to Potiphar's palace, rising to manager in record time. Good for him, but trouble's brewing. Potiphar's wife notices Joe's good looks and tries to get him to, well, let's say, join her book club. He politely declines. She's furious. And next you know, Joseph is behind bars on a charge that he didn't deserve. And that's where we find him in Genesis chapter 40. Stuck in prison, no dad to bail him out. That fancy coat, just a memory. Yet even here, God shows Joseph kindness. And he finds himself as a special assistant to the prison warden. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 40. And I'm going to read verses 1 to 23. I'm going to turn to it as well. Genesis is the first book in the Bible, so it's quite easy to find. I'm reading for the NIV version. Here we go. What I'll read from the screen. Thanks, Steve. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. After they had been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. When Joseph came to the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in his master's house, "Why do you look so sad today?" "We both had dreams," they answered, "but there's no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. He said to him, "In my dream, I saw a vine in front of me. And on the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and put the cup in his hand." "This is what it means," Joseph said to him. "The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand just as you used to when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." When the chief baker saw that Joseph had given a favorable interpretation, he said to Joseph, "Oh, I too had a dream. On my head were three baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for the Pharaoh, but the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." "This is what it means," Joseph said. "The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your heads and impale your body on a pole." Oh, dear. "And the birds will eat away your flesh." Now, the third day was Pharaoh's birthday, and he gave a feast for all his officials. He lifted up the heads of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker in the presence of his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position so that he once again put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he impaled the chief baker, just as Joseph had said to them in his interpretation. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Nice story. Not so nice for the baker. Now, just a little thing about, we have a sermon series pretty much every month. It's not strictly like that. And we always, just so you know, this may seem a little bit self-helpy. That's because it is. But we purposely aim our January series at those people who might have maybe attended us for the first time at Christmas. Maybe you're watching online. You're very, very welcome. And it's just something that encouraged them to think, actually, yeah, I can take this and I can apply this to my life. Next month, we're going to do something that's more apologetics, answering some of those deep questions of life through what the Bible says. And then in the run-up to Lent, we're doing a series called Investigating Jesus, where every single week we are going to be looking at who Jesus was and how we can follow him and be like him. So let's just give you an idea of where we're going over the next few months. But this month we're looking at, obviously, how we deal with disappointment in life. So I just want you to imagine Joseph in this prison cell, young and talented, yet due to no fault of his own, is confined to a prison indefinitely. And I'm imagining it's not probably a very nice place to be. There's little hope of release. And then these two guys turn up from highly privileged position, the cupbearer and the baker, both suffering from a massive downturn in fortunes. See, I just want to just draw from this story just three things very, very quickly that might help us if we are feeling overlooked or forgotten, just like Joseph was. And the first thing is this. We need to learn how to practice self-compassion rather than self-esteem. And I'll unpack maybe what that means. See, what interests me, if I was Joseph, I would be in a right huff about being in the position that I was in. And yet what we find fairly quickly is that Joseph finds a position of responsibility within the prison. And also what happens when, well, they, first of all, they, because he's responsible, they offer this cupbearer and this baker to Joseph and asked him to look after them. It says in verse 4, the captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph and he attended them. If you were Joseph, how would you treat these guards? So what I find interesting is that Joseph treats them with kindness and compassion. So much so that rather than being heads down, just worried about the fact that he is in this dungeon, he notices that when they are feeling dejected, and more than that, he asks the question, why do you look so sad today? See, the art of practicing self-compassion is this idea that when we're in a difficult situation, when we're feeling overlooked or forgotten, then actually I find that I get hard on myself. I start to get annoyed with myself that maybe I should have worked better or tried harder. I remember I went away with a church thing to Atlanta in the States. It was a big thing for me. Once again, as you know, when I go away on a holiday, I always have an idea as long as this happened, I'll be happy. And in my head, it was as long as I make some friendships and connections and I have conversations, then I will be happy. And I went along, and I remember being in this party full of ministers from South America and North America and Australia, and I didn't manage to talk to any of them. And I was so cross with myself. And sometimes we could get angry and cross with ourselves because of something we've done or haven't done, which means we've become forgotten and overlooked. And I find particularly, and this is a slight issue with becoming a Christian, not a follower of Jesus, but becoming a Christian, and we can get very hard on ourselves if we're not doing the things we think we should be doing. Pray more, trust more, give more. And we can get a real downer on ourselves. And practicing the art of self-compassion is going, you know what, it's okay for me to feel this way. It's okay for me to be upset and to feel jealous and to feel angry. That's okay. It's a natural response to life. Life can be unfair. People can be annoying. Life can go wrong. And the feelings we feel when that happens are okay to feel. The problem comes, and I've mentioned this already, is that we can build a prison around those feelings. They can lead to rejection and resentment and jealousy. And that's when things start to get out of whack. Don't be hard on yourself. Give yourself a break. Don't ignore the pain. Acknowledge it, but don't let it turn to cynicism. It's normal to feel pain and rejection. Accept it, but move on. If we focus too much on self-esteem, trying to put ourselves up in a hard position, you know, I've tried to feel good about ourselves and say, no, this is all the things that's good about me. There's nothing wrong with that. But actually, sometimes we just have to be kind to ourselves. I've always just tell ourselves off all the time. We are often our worst critic. We have a God that speaks truth with love and grace. A God who looks at you and goes, I'm so pleased. You're my creation. You are my child. I love you. That's the sort of attitude we need to have. And yet we find it so difficult to be that to ourselves. And the problem is, if we're unable to be that to ourselves, it makes it very, very difficult for us to be that to others. See, we saw Joseph practicing love and grace and compassion despite his circumstances. And that's because he was able to be, I'm guessing, the same to himself. We often, as it says in the Bible, what comes out of the mouth comes from the heart. Where is your heart at with yourself and others? And we see Joseph acting out and speaking out of a heart full of love, grace, and compassion. Being kind and compassionate to yourself allows you to do the same to others. So number one, practice self-compassion rather than self-esteem. Number two and number three are a little bit similar, but number two is develop your sense of identity. See, when these guys came to Joseph and said, we need someone to interpret our dreams. Joseph's response was, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. See, Joseph, as we picked out in the overview of the story, Joseph had a tough time. He starts with this vision, this dream given to him by God that seems to promise something amazing in his life. And yet every time he seems to be on the up, he gets knocked back down again. And here he finds himself in prison. And yet he still says, it's God who interprets dreams. And therefore, myself, I'm going to interpret that dream, not through my own power or strength or knowledge, but because I'm a servant of God. Despite all that happens, Joseph still identifies himself as a servant to God. His ability to interpret dreams was a gift from God that he was willing to exercise. It's an identity that rises above his circumstances, whether in prison or in a palace, whether he's praised or overlooked, whether he's admired or forgotten, Joseph's identity remains a firm and unchanging foundation that enables him to speak truth with compassion and without fear. So you put your hand up if you would tell the baker the meaning of his dream. I wouldn't. See, I find it very difficult to speak truthfully because often I'm like this, and maybe you're like this. I'm worried about what people will think about me. There's a technical term, they call it fear of man. That's a collective term, not just men, but women as well. We worry about what people think. Now, some people just don't care what other people think. Joseph does care. We know that because we see how he interacts with these guys. And yet, ultimately, his identity is rooted in a relationship and a calling higher than his present reality. And because of that, he's able to speak truth, even if it's a tough truth. Joseph develops a sense of identity. And now, number three, as we're coming in to land, to finish, Joseph finds a sense of meaning. So we see in verse 23 that Joseph is forgotten. He's done all this only 3 days later. The cupbearer is so happy about his newly renewed position, he completely forgets Joseph. Joseph's hopes for freedom go unmet. And yet he is all able to hold on to a bigger purpose, that his life has meaning, and therefore he has hope. So I'm going to tell you just briefly an overview of a story of a guy who also found himself in prison. If you're probably my age or older, you might know who this guy is. If you're my age or younger, you might not remember this guy, but I certainly remember this guy. His name is Sir Terry Waite, and I remember back in the 80s, so it was the mid-80s, and he was the Archbishop's special envoy. He toured the world kind of working on behalf of the Archbishop. I'm guessing just so the Archbishop doesn't have to go all over the world. Terry Waite did that for him. But amongst all those troubles, Terry Waite found that he had a particular knack and talent for negotiating the release of hostages, particularly in the Middle East. He started off with a few sort of Anglican priests who found themselves kidnapped. But he soon realized that he was able to get involved in all sorts of hostage negotiations. He was very, very good at what he did. And in January 1987, he was negotiating the release of some hostages in Beirut. And he was told they were unwell. And he was granted free passage to go and see these hostages. He was told, you'll be fine. We promise we won't lay a hand on you. You can go and check up on these hostages. Unfortunately, that was not the case, and Terry Waite was taken hostage himself. For 5 years, he was imprisoned. 4.5 of those years, he was in solitary confinement. It was only the final 6 months when he joined some other hostages. And I was just reading an interview with him about how did you cope? You know, when you're seeing, he talks about seeing himself get older. His beard went from black to, well, it got longer for a start, and grey started to appear. And he suddenly thinks, you know, he just sees himself wasting away. A bit like Joseph, this young man who had so much talent, so much potential, wasting away in prison. How do you deal with that? How do you still cope with life when everything seems hopeless? He says this, if I can put it very, very simply, and this may seem too simple for some, I could say this in the face of my captors. You have the power to break my body, and you have tried. You have the power to bend my mind, and you have tried. But my soul is not yours to possess. There was that essential belief that my soul lay in the hands of God and couldn't be taken by others. Now, we can argue till the cows come home, as people have done across the generations, about what the soul is. For me, it's the sum total of me, my identity, my essential being, which lay in the hands of God and couldn't be taken by others. And that very, very simple belief was enough to enable me to retain hope. If anyone listening to this is in a situation of real unpleasantness, difficulty, sickness, or whatever, realize that you are not going to be destroyed. If you face suffering, it will be very difficult. There will be no relief from the suffering. But if you can have hope behind you, it will not be destroyed. When you are at the extremities, it is quite simple. Don't expect God to get you out of a hole in the way you expect. If you have faith, you will not be destroyed. And if you find that you can live in hope, not just for this life, but for dimensions that lie way beyond this life. So the reality is, God doesn't promise that your circumstances will necessarily change. Joseph remained in the prison cell. He is forgotten. He is overlooked. He is stuck. And the question for you is, perhaps, what is your prison? Perhaps you're feeling like you're in a particularly dark season. Unmet goals, missed opportunities or no opportunities, overlooked and forgotten. See, Joseph was able to maintain a positive attitude. He was able to show love and compassion to others. He was able to maintain an identity that rose above the trying circumstances because he had meaning in life. There was a bigger purpose. And sometimes we find meaning in life through our family or our job or acquiring stuff or our hobbies and interests. These are all things that can be taken away from us. But what can't be taken away from you? If you are a follower of Jesus, and I don't know if you are, this morning. If you're not, you are so welcome here. We try and make this church a place where you can hear about Jesus because we want you to know Jesus. But ultimately, if you are a follower of Jesus, then your identity above anything else is as a loved child of God. And that gives us hope despite our present circumstances, because with that eternal hope through Jesus. For Joseph, it wasn't all over. God has plans. And if you read on the story, which I'll encourage you to do so, you'll realize that his unseen faithfulness would get the stage for a future he couldn't imagine. But I'm going to leave you with this passage from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 8 to 9. We have troubles all around us, but we are not defeated. We do not know what to do, but we do not give up the hope of living. We are persecuted, but God does not leave us. We are hurt sometimes, but we are not destroyed. Some questions are going to come up. Just take some time out before we sing again. We'll ask these questions.
Have you experienced rejection in life? How has that affected your outlook on life? How can you maintain a positive attitude despite your situation? Where do you find your sense of identity and purpose?
Go. That was quite profound, wasn't it?
Was it was actually.
Yeah, for a January. Oh no. To wrap your head around that one.
Definitely.
But it was good. That was helpful, I think. Yeah, because I resonate with Martin's, you know, what all that preparation for Christmas and all that, but it never quite works out.
It doesn't, does it? No.
It never quite ticks all the boxes.
No.
Or never
It's never like everyone else's.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always a lot. It's the expectation thing, isn't it, that he was talking about. And we expect certain things, and they never quite pan out. I mean, that's usually because we're fed certain expectations.
Yes,
it's going to be like this, and it isn't often.
Yeah,
it's a bit like I think one of the expectations that you learn as you go through life is that life isn't actually you're taught that life will be fair if you do A, B will happen. If you work hard, you get rewarded. If you're a good boy, you know, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. You get that expectation fed to you. I blame it on school sports days, really. Nobody loses.
Oh, yes.
Winds me up.
Yes.
You know, there are no losers here. The guy at the back, no, he's lost. Let's be honest.
But you've done it. Well done.
but the reality is we don't set people up, do we?
That's true.
And then they get into the real world and...
Everyone's,
hang on a minute, you do lose.
And
you don't always get what you deserve. And so one of the things I've discovered in my old age, Sue, don't ask how old, is life isn't fair. It's not, is it?
It's not.
But our expectation is that it will be and that everybody gets the same amount of opportunities and reward and da-da-da-da. And the reality is nobody does. I was reading, you know, the parable of the talents.
Yes.
And something struck me the other day. I was reading that, and it says that the landowner, the master, gave each of his servants, and he didn't give them all the same.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, hang on, Jesus, that's not fair. No. If you're the boss, you should give everybody the same. He doesn't. He gives one 10, and he gives one 5, and he gives one 2. And that's not fair. And then when they come back and they've multiplied whatever they've got and they've, you know, done something with what he gave them, which is what we're supposed to do with life, do something with your life that God has given you, he doesn't, one of them doesn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
And instead of Jesus, instead of the master sort of dishing it out evenly, well, I'll split his portion up, I'll take it away from him, I'll split it up evenly amongst you all, he doesn't do that either. He gives it to the guy who's got more. I'm thinking, hang on, Jesus, that's not fair either. So I don't know. I think it's not about how much you got, is it? It's not about what you've got or what somebody else has got. It's about what you do with what you've got.
Exactly. I think I was struck when he said actually that when he's talking about Joseph, that compassion.
Mm. Yeah.
And actually.
Yeah.
And I think as we get older, I think when you're a child growing up, you do look around and actually you're not good enough. You're not the same. You want to be the same as everyone else.
Yeah.
But actually, as you grow up, you recognise actually where your strengths are. And I think you learn to call them your strengths.
Yeah, you do.
As well, actually.
Yeah.
And actually use those fully. And it is that compassion. You know, actually, he was compassionate. Yes, you can still feel hurt when it doesn't need, but actually...
Yeah. Yeah, because we are our worst critic, aren't we? I know for years I was my worst critic.
Yeah.
I was a bit like Martin. Never got picked for the football team.
Yeah, me too.
And football team.
Netball team.
Yeah. That's a bit sexist as well. Why can't I play netball? Hang on. No,
it's
that's
basketball,
right.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it will be, yeah. but it is like that, isn't it? It's that you have... They say about, because I do some counselling, and they say your personality, what makes you, is made up of different bits. And two of those, there are four different bits, but two of them are a critical parent. That's the bit that says not good enough, need to try harder, yeah. Do this, do that. You should be able to do this. You need to try. You need to go for it. Critical, quite hard, which we need because otherwise we'd never get off the sofa, would we? But then there's also another bit of us called the nurturing parent, which is, it's okay. You're doing your best. Mm. Well done. And I don't know about you, but I have a louder voice. Well, not less so now, but the louder voice for quite a long time was a critical parent in my head.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. You need them both. You need both of these bits of you, and you need to love them both because you need them both. But if you only ever listen to one of them, you're in a trouble.
Mm.
You need to listen to the other one that says, you know what? You're good. You can do it. You're great. Go for it. You're okay.
Yes.
And you need to listen to that as well. And we don't often. We don't. Takes a bit of experience to sort of work that one out.
It does. And I think it's that even as you get older, you still compare yourself to other people.
Yeah, you do.
If you don't get invited to something, well,
yeah.
What's wrong with me?
Yeah, I know. I know. And I like Martin's, you know, that idea that actually when you're in a tough time and when it feels like you're at the bottom and everybody's forgotten you and you're not good enough sort of stuff, that actually you have that self-compassion that you say, actually, you're doing all right. This isn't your fault. You're not here because you deserve to be here. You're here because of life and it's unfair. But also that sense of actually having a sense of your own value inside rather than just relying on other people to tell you.
Yes.
It's called an external locus of evaluation. A lot of us have an external one. So we rely on this idea that I'm good if people tell me I'm good.
Right.
But if they tell me I'm not so good or if they get upset, a bit like Martin was saying, well, I can't say that. He'll get upset.
Yes.
Yeah. And you need this internal locus of evaluation. You need an internal one. And the best one as a Christian is the sense that I am loved by God, irrespective of how well or how not well I do. I am deeply loved by God. And if you can internalize that, you don't need everybody else to make you feel good or to make you feel okay about yourself. You don't need that. You need an internal locus of evaluation, folks. And you need it basing on what God thinks of you, not what other people think of you. That's what you need. And you need that in January, trust me, because January is a crappy month and a lot of people get grumpy and say things they don't mean.
Yeah.
They do. I was talking to Claudia about that yesterday and she said everybody at work is grumpy and all a bit short with each other and a bit, and it makes you feel, oh, what have I done? Mm. And she needs to say, it's not about me. It's not about me, it's about them. Yeah. I don't know. Very profound.
It is, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Where do you, I mean, that idea of maintaining a positive attitude despite your situation, I think Martin hit on something really important about living for something bigger than me.
Mm.
How can you maintain a positive attitude, irrespective of how fair or unfair life is on me? And it will be unfair at times. How can I still be positive? Well, that's because I'm living for something bigger than me.
Yeah.
That makes a difference.
Mm.
We call it the kingdom of God, don't we?
Mm.
And we're living for that. We're not living just for ourselves.
Yeah.
And whatever happens to me, I can contribute to that kingdom of God.
Yeah.
I can still make a difference.
Yeah.
And that gives you a sense of value and a sense of purpose and all that. So if you're just living for yourself, it's a pretty small world and you're pretty vulnerable.
I think if you recognise that, you don't get drawn into this comparison where you always fail, where you always fall short.
Yeah.
When you compare.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you never know what God's going to do
yeah.
for the bigger picture.
Exactly. And your role in that.
Yeah. And you never know, won't you? You always wonder who you're going to bump into in heaven, don't you?
Exactly.
I always do. Mm-hmm. I always think people, I'm going to be some surprises. I'm going to go, oh, I didn't know that made a difference.
Wow.
Yeah. Because you live in something bigger than you.
Mm.
It's important to live for something bigger than you. It does make a big difference to the way you see the world. Yeah. There you go. Wow, that's enough to...
I think that's enough. Anyway, if you have got any questions, please, please don't just think ask those questions. If you've got questions, you can always email into us and raise those questions and someone will get back to you. So the email address is there, gotquestions at holybaptist.org.uk.
Yeah. And do let anybody know. If you think there's somebody you've bumped into who might need to hear this message today, and it's for them, and I think it's for most of us, to be honest. Yeah. So if it's for them, tip them off and get them to log into the YouTube channel, Holy Baptist Church YouTube channel, and they can watch it back. All right. That'd be really good.
That was today's episode of the Holy Baptist Church podcast. We hope this prompted you to want to follow Jesus even just a little bit more closely. If you have any questions about what you've heard in today's episode, or you want to know more about what it means to follow Jesus, you can email us at gotquestions@holybaptist.org.uk. We would love to hear from you. It would really make our day. If you want to hear more from us, just a reminder that you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and you can access that and our YouTube channel by heading to holybaptist.org.uk/media. Thank you again for listening to the Holy Baptist Church podcast. We pray God will bless you, and we will see you next time.